Accession number 11769.
Mr. Berry, Real 2. So, Operation Principal was to attack the Italian fleet in Palermo?
Well, no, not quite true. We went out there to attack the Italian fleet, full stop. But they couldn't be found. I suppose that Sladen and his powers that be decided they'd have a go at what they could. And we had these attacks at Palermo and other subsequent attacks after that.
But were you actually... Was your own operation called Operation Principal?
I don't think so. No, I don't think it was called Operation Principal. I have seen the name, but I can't recall it now. Anyway, we carried out this attack on Tripoli Harbour, but our machine was damaged. It wasn't very successful, I'm afraid, because the others didn't get to attack either, and they got captured, and we evaded capture.
Can you describe what you remember about that in detail?
There you are, asking for it. Yeah. In January 1943, we were 6 miles off Tripoli, North Africa. The British submarine HMS Thunderbolt was lying partly submerged with the water lapping around the feet of four grotesque-looking figures in diving suits. Alongside two what were known as chariots had been slid out of the containers on the submarine's outer casing in which they had been transported to this point. The captain was standing on the conning tower, shouting to the four divers, "Are you ready, as I am going to submerge? There is an E-boat lying on the horizon." Two of the divers gave up thumbs-up signals, and all four then closed and clamped down the visors of their headpieces. One of the divers was myself, and this is my story. There was a loud clang from the conning tower as the captain disappeared from view, closing the hatch behind him. The next thing is a loud rushing and hissing of water all round the divers as the sub's vents were opened and she started to submerge with the machines or chariots starting to float off. I cannot think of a more frightening experience, the four of us standing alone on that boat's casing with the German E-boat on the horizon, a few miles off the enemy's shores and water gouting all around us in no uncertain terms. And for want of a better description, your base and friends sinking rapidly beneath you. The next thing I knew, I was being dragged down with the sub. We had all forgotten the jumping wire which runs from bow to stern, and on the way passes over the conning tower. The boat had submerged rather faster than the norm, and the valve on my breathing gear had caught on this wire and was rapidly pulling me down with it. And as the depth involved would have meant my demise, despite the diving gear, something had to be done quickly. Luckily, being strong, I was able to pull myself down and away from the wire. But in doing so, the bypass valve on the oxygen bottles was knocked open, so rapidly spat out the mouthpiece, which allowed the surplus oxygen to escape into the suit, which then started to swiftly inflate. On reaching the surface, I found myself alongside the machine, which I grabbed hold of with great relief, vented the suit via the cuffs and got onto the chariot, and away we went. That, I think, describes it better than I can say it now.
What time of day was it?
Night. Night time.
The early part or the latter part of the night?
Well, you always achieve to get the maximum amount of dark hours. I think at this time we left about 10 o'clock in the evening because that was the maximum. Our way was to be shown in, which in fact it was, by the RAF dropping flares over Tripoli Harbour.
So the idea was to prevent the Germans blocking the harbour for the 8th Army?
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
What operation did you then start to prepare for after that?
Well, after we'd evaded capture and gone back and got back to Cairo, where we met Churchill on the way, and got back to Malta, we were then shipped back to England. I think there was four of us remaining out of the 30. And I went on holiday, got married, came back to Titania to find my number one, Larkin, had been made training officer, which meant I was on my own. So they then teamed me up as number one with Stoker Ken Lawrence as my number two. We then, I think we were somewhere around about 9 or 10 months playing around in Scotland, doing various odd things. Yes, after I'd got married and we'd been teamed up, and Ken Lawrence and myself had done a lot of exercises, we were transferred to Varbel, which was a submarine base ship, and from there we were, a team of us were formed up. I think it was about 6 officers and 6 ratings with mechanics, and we went out to Italy, to HMS Fabius in Taranto in Italy. Our base was San Vito. From there, I took part in an operation against block ships again in La Spezia Harbour, which was the Italian base from where all these charioteers had started on the Italian side. It was the base of their, what they call their 10th submarine flotilla, which was small explosive motorboats, bigger motorboats, and human torpedoes and swimmers.
Can you describe that operation as you recollect it?
Yes, we were taken on a destroyer from Taranto up to Corsica in company with an Italian motor torpedo boat. We were eventually loaded onto the motor torpedo boat off La Spezia. The 6th Army, or the American Army at that time, was advancing up the leg of Italy and was at Leghorn. And we could see the smoke and what have you coming from Leghorn when we were off, coming in on the destroyer. Eventually we were just transferred from the destroyer onto the motor torpedo boat, taken within 3 miles of La Spezia Harbour. And it was a new form of launching to us. The machines were slid off the stern of the motor torpedo boat, and we went down ladders into the water at the side of the boat and got on board the machines. Causa and I were now off to sink the 2 Italian heavy cruisers in their own backyard, or it had been before the Italians surrendered. Causa was after the Bolzano, and I was after the Gorizia. Everything was black and quiet, and the voices of the crew we had just left were muted. On our left was a large island, part of the peninsula surrounding the harbour, which was our goal. One could not help but imagine that you were being watched by 1,000 eyes with guns waiting to open fire on you. If we had been dropped at the right position, we had 3 miles to go before coming to the breakwaters across the harbour. At this stage, nothing could be seen except a line of hills, so the compass bearing was all we had to go on. Until we got closer in, but as we had been going for about 3 miles, if our speed was correct, of the latter we had no means of knowing, after about 4 hours I could see the outline of the breakwater, so decided to trim down. This is where troubles began. Having got the right trim, I tried diving, at which stage the propeller came out of the water, making a horrible din, and on surfacing in the opposite direction, making a hell of a noise doing that. The machine broke surface at an alarming angle. By this time, the main entrance of the harbour could be seen by the amount of activity, including torchlights. I decided that we could try this entrance and just hope that I could get away with using the main ballast only. I then became aware of the slow speed we seemed to be doing, so it was obvious that the battery was going flat, as it had not been charged for some time, and was probably why it had seemed to take us so long on the run in. With hindsight, it transpired from what I found out on return to base that the machines were leaking, and there was water in the actual machine which was running from backwards and forward, hence my inability to control it. What to do now, even if I risked a mainly surface run-in using the ballast tank, it was certain that the battery would get us the other mile or so to my target. Plus the fact that if detected, Cause's efforts could be nullified, as also the Gamma boys, who were Italian swimmers who had accompanied us to attack smaller vessels along the docksides. All I would achieve in doing would be to alert the enemy.
Gamma boys being the Italian name
Italian
for frogmen.
Swimmers from the frogmen, what we now know as frogmen, yes. Although to abandon the attack from here outside the harbour, there was no way we could reach the arranged place for pickup by the motorboats, which had meant us landing after the attack on a beach inside the harbour a long way from here. So as I saw it, there was nothing for it but turn the machine towards the end of the peninsula on my port side and hope we had enough power to reach the rocks, which I did. So after that seemed an awful long time. We can only, what I could describe as judge the rocks at a point which looked like an abandoned ferry, jetty or wooden construction. Well, from there on it, so I mean, we got ashore after a struggle and managed to get up into the hills.
In fact, I think after both your operations, you had to land and evade capture.
That's right, yes. I think that was my achievement, actually.
Why do you think that more wasn't achieved by British charioteer efforts in the war?
Well, I think it really came along a little bit late, because the tide of war had turned by that time, and the X-craft were had disabled the Tirpitz. The Italian fleet had gone from the Mediterranean because they were out of the war. The Germans didn't have a lot of ships left to attack. I think it was just generally too late.
What do you think?
Because the Far East, you see, there was all. I mean, we took our lives in our hands. That if we were caught, that the Germans wouldn't necessarily put us in prisoner of war camps had been proved by Hasler's canoe expedition in the river, or was it one of the rivers in France where they
the
caught
Garonne.
Them. Although they'd been battle dress, they'd shot most of them. So there was no guarantee that we would get away with it. But if we got caught by the Japanese, we knew damn well we wouldn't get away with it. It's as simple as that. Because they had no respect for human life, or it was part of their upbringing, wasn't it? No, I think it just came along too late. If we'd been 12 months earlier, the whole thing would have been completely different.
Just going back to the training, was there any use of drugs in the training?
Yes, Benzedrine was tried out at this stage. We were defined that we would all be issued with escape packs when we went on any attacks, and in these escape packs were Benzedrine tablets. So our doctor decided on the Titania that we should try these tablets out. So we were all given one at 8 o'clock one night, and we went ashore on an exercise. I think we were supposed to get through the local home guard in Lewis. All sorts of mad things happened, telephone wires cut and goodness knows what. I personally was galloping up and down the hill like a lunatic. It wasn't the fact that we'd lost our mental stability, we just got too much energy. But what, of course, the Benzedrine does is accelerate the heart. Is that the right word?
Accelerate
the heart. It's designed, really, in an escape pack, that if you get into a situation when you're trying to get back home, and you say you've got a mountain in front of you to climb, and you're on your last legs, if you take a Benzedrine tablet, then it will get you over it. Because what happened to us, the next day we'd so worn ourselves out, we went and turned into a sleep, and we didn't wake up for about 24 hours. Exaggerating a bit, but that's what it seemed to us. We didn't really return to the conscious world for about 24 hours, because our bodies had been pushed beyond their normal limits. The one that under the training, we did what we used to call a lot of guinea pigging, and that was going to C.B. Gorman's in Tolworth in Surrey, where they had a pressure tank. The drill was The drill was to dress up in full diving kit, to lower us into a pot containing enough water to cover our heads, with an attendant sitting above the water. Air pressure was then turned on to simulate depth. We were then taken down until the symptoms of oxygen Pete. Oxygen Pete was our nickname for oxygen poisoning. Showed itself usually by a trembling round the lips. As soon as this happened, the attendant belted the lid of the pot with a big hammer. The lid was swung up and a block and tackle was lowered, and you were unceremoniously hauled up rather rapidly and dumped on the deck. Speed was of the essence, as once Pete was around and you were unconscious, you had to be put on air within 2 minutes, otherwise it could prove fatal. All these tests are obviously being carried out on us, for the diving world in particular, because very little was known about oxygen diving. And even to this day in 1990, talking to the sub-aqua clubs, they don't like using oxygen. Anyway, that was what we used to do there.
Now, after the second operation you described at La Spezia in June 1944, you went ashore. How did you get back to Allied lines?
Well, after we'd made an unsuccessful attempt to climb some mountains and get back to the beach where we were supposed to be taken off, we'd gone along a goat track along a cliff face and couldn't succeed in getting down because it was night time, and we spent the night with our legs wrapped around a small trunk of a tree about 1 inch in diameter, because we couldn't go backwards or forwards because we couldn't see. The next day we came back up and sat and contemplated La Spezia and how we could get back to our own lines, because La Spezia is where we were, was on a peninsula, or the peninsular arm of La Spezia Harbour, which is completely surrounded by mountains, and the town itself runs to the foothills of the mountains. To escape around via the mountains was rather a daunting task, and would probably taken us about a week, because we meant going uphill and down dale. So having sat in about a couple of hundred feet above the town and watched some Germans playing football in their local stadium, we decided the best thing we could do, there's a 50-50 chance of getting away with it, and was walk through the town itself. Although we had British battle dress on, we had no caps, so it wasn't too bad. So when the dusk came, we did that. We started walking through the town, got right away round with one or two hairy escapes. I think the most hairiest one was, we were walking around the dockyard area. There was a stream of light pouring across the road, which was coming from a sentry box or dockyard gates. I thought, we'll keep out of that. So we went to walk away around this stream of light, and there must have been a sentry there who broke wind, putting it politely. So we immediately turned around and retraced our steps. But eventually we got round by going up into the hills again, crossed a river, found a boat to get across the river, that's right. Our main form of sustenance was tomatoes, because the tomatoes were ripe at that time. And we were sitting on the banks of a river, wondering what we'd do with ourselves, when a young Italian lad walked up to us, introduced himself. Ken Lawrence could speak a bit of Italian, I wasn't much good at it, but he deduced that he wanted to be friendly, but he was waving a 45 revolver of 1914 vintage around in the air, which was well rusted up. Anyway, he volunteered to take us up into the mountains to meet the partisans. After quite a bit of upping and downing amongst these hills, we came to a walk round a corner and we found ourselves in a marble quarry. And the first people we bumped into was Causer and Smith, the other pair. They'd landed elsewhere and had also come back to this same partisan. So there was, I mean, there was no design that we'd ever meet up there. It just happened, one of those things. And we spent about a month with the partisans.
What impression did you form of the partisans?
This particular band, they weren't too bad. They were fairly well organised. But when we decided to leave them and make our own way back, we met other bands, including some communist ones. We were far from well organised. In fact, they were a dead loss to all and sundry. And their main concern seemed to be going down into the towns and villages and picking up what they called fascista collaborators, holding summary justice and all the rest of it. But still, that's another story.
So they were just executing them?
Mm.
So what was the political complexion of the band you were with?
The band we were with were mainly, well, they were Italian, and I think they were led by an ex-Italian officer of some description. But I mean, I couldn't speak Italian.
How big was the band?
About 50.
Mm. Were they well armed?
Well, yes, they were very well armed, but the irony of it was that I think, instance, one day the Germans started attacking us, and I indicated to this Capitano, what about some of these Bren guns you've got down there? And he asked me if I understood the workings of a Bren gun. I said, yes, of course I do. So they gave me one of these Bren guns, and I participated in the general action of things. But they hadn't got a clue what it was about, because the first thing I found when I came to use the Bren gun, there was about 34 rounds instead of 30 in the chamber, so there was not a hope in hell of the damn thing ever working. Anyway, having sorted that out, I didn't actually get much problem with it, but still.
So where did they get these arms from?
Oh, they were dropped by the Allies. Oh yes, they were well armed, and this was the irony of it. A lot of these arms were falling into the wrong hands of these renegade partisans.
And so they'd had no agents, no British or American agent with them to...
No, there was no... In fact, we... Causa could speak the language a bit, but being a Brazilian by upbringing, it was a similar language, he told me that they had got a wireless of sorts, and they would get in touch with our people and say we were alive and well. But to this day, I don't know whether they did or not, except looking at some of the garbled signals Robbie's got, or his father had. It looked as though they might have got through, because the names were completely up the creek.
Were they causing much of a problem to the Germans?
Oh, yes. They used to go out in the evening and blow up bridges and things like this. This particular band, yes. And this is why I think the Germans started retaliating, and they got a bit fed up with it.
How many attacks did the Germans launch on them whilst you were...
Well, they were about 3 days. They were about 3 days, because they had a hell of a job on to launch an attack, because the road where they were launching it from was up a steep sided hill. And the band was actually in the quarry itself, with an overhang above it, so any mortars or anything like that sent over didn't have any effect. They just went straight over the top. But eventually the band decided to leave that particular place, and we went off elsewhere.
How far afield did they roam?
I don't know. I never went out with them in the evening. We always, when they went out on their raids, we just stopped in the camp itself.
What were the nearest places to them?
I suppose Lucca was about the nearest town, biggish town, because looking at a map, I can't remember. Because we could see, if we got the right part of the hills, we could see the sea and Leghorn and places like that. In fact, at night we could see the shelling going on. But of course, the irony of it was that although when we started out on the raid, we weren't concerned about getting back, because we thought the Allies would advance beyond us, but they never did advance beyond that point, because if you know Italy, the hills or mountains run right down to that area, and from my experience, seeing, walking through the mountains, the Germans had really got it fortified.
What was the attitude of the partisans towards you as British people?
Oh, fairly friendly, yes. Because we had the language barrier, which is always a stumbling block.
Were they well fed?
Not really, no. They managed to seem to cook up some sort of a stew daily, but that was about all we had. I don't know where they got it from. I suppose they just got it locally from somewhere.
What was the attitude of the local people towards the partisans?
There again, I don't know, because we didn't mix with them. They had a lot of Russians there, who, I think there was about six Russians, who they couldn't speak Italian, they couldn't speak English, but it was a gesture, sign language thing. But they were the only ones who knew how to handle Bren guns. As far as I could gather, their history was that they had been overrun in Russia, taken into the German army, been sent to Italy to fight, and then of course they deserted into the hills at the first opportunity, which I suppose, in hindsight, if you looked at the makeup of the German army, there must have been a heck of a lot of other people in it.
So how did you get from the partisan band back to Allied lines?
Well, eventually, after we decided to leave the partisans and make our own way back proper, we met these other various bands, and then we finished up in an Italian village overlooking Lucca, which is a fortified town near Pisa. And we thought about it. We said, well, I think we'll try and get back to make it. So we agreed that Ken Lawrence and myself would start off one day and Causa and Smith the next. Yeah, so the next morning, Ken Lawrence and myself left this village and walked down. There was a road running up to it. And we walked right down into Lucca, skirted round through Lucca. And went through the various tomato plantations and what have you, keeping off the main road as much as possible. No, we did spend two nights. We were two nights, because it was one instant where we were walking along this road and we walked round a corner and there was four Germans, including a sergeant, strung across the road. There's no way could we turn around and walk back, it would have been too obvious, so we had to keep going. And we walked past them and just said, Buonasera, and that was it. So it must have been that, but there were quite a lot of Germans about, and as we got nearer the line, if you look for them, you could see them about, and in fact there was one occasion where we looked up in the hill, and there was a stable with a few Germans and horses stabled. Because the Germans use a lot of horses for transporting. And they looked down at us and we gave them a wave. And shortly after that we sort of left the road and went across the plantation of watermelons. We bumped into an Italian farmer. He didn't seem to mind us eating his watermelons. Anyway, we got talking to him. And a few yards from us was a dried out canal, which was running down towards the River Arno, which was our goal to get over, which is obviously the front line at that time. So we asked him, or Ken asked him, were there any Germans guarding the canal obviously ran under the Arno, because there's no way could a canal run into a swiftly flowing river and come out the other side, because it showed on the map as coming out the other side. So we asked this Italian if the Germans were guarding the entrance to the tunnel under the Arno. He said, no, non Tedeschi. So, well, that's very nice. But anyway, after we left him and we started walking down this towpath, which is about a mile to the Arno, it became dark. I said to Ken, I said, don't trust that devil. I'm sure that Germans wouldn't be stupid enough to leave a place like that unprotected. So we decided to ignore it as a nice, easy way to get under the river. We decided to make for the river itself and swim across. So we got down to the bank of the river. It was pitch black night. In fact, it was so dark that our own people were sending mortars over, and these things were landing on the path in front of us, and we didn't know where they were until we walked through a slope in the ground where the mortar had landed, and you could smell the cordite. Anyway, after a while we got to the river bank and we could see the outlines of the old bridge works on the outside, so we managed to crawl up, and we crawled up the bank and we looked across the bridge, and it was down, completely shattered, and there was no way could we use it to get across. So we decided to retreat from there, to go round the foot of the bridge and have a look from the other side. When we got round the other side, we could see the water was, well, fordable. It was so low because it backed up against the remains of the bridge. So we sort of walked up onto the top of the bank, and the Germans must have spotted us, because the next thing I knew there was a hell of a bang, and a hand grenade landed alongside us, threw me into a shell hole. And when I looked round, Lawrence was stretched out on the bank at the top. And I spoke to him and shook him and got no answer at all. And I thought, well, he must be dead. So I left him there, I'm afraid, and we got down into the river and waded across. When I got to the other side, I was not shouting, but saying at the top of my voice, "Don't shoot, I'm British." And you know, I must have walked, well, I did, I walked 2 miles and the dawn coming up, found a haystack when it started raining, got under there and sheltered. And I must have walked another 2 miles before I found anybody, and I found some of the Americans. American camp.
Where was this near?
This was outside Lucca.
And what month would this have been in?
This was all in the 6-7 week period. From the time we set out on the operation to the time I got back.